I want to ask you a question. Why should we worship God? I think everybody here knows that we ought to. Why do we? Why should we? What'd you say, brother?
Because He's worthy of our worship.
He is worthy. He is our Creator. It's due Him. We worship Him for who He is and what He's like. The truth and the reality of who God is and the works that He has done. It's good to stop and think about those things. It's not good to just go through the motions and do things, or to do things just because you know to do it. As we're going to see in this psalm, when you come to approach God, there are certain expectations. There are certain requirements if you're going to worship God. He sets the terms. He is not obligated to receive our worship. But we are obligated to worship Him. And when you know who He really is, you can't help it. You will worship Him. So it's good to stop and think on these things of who God really is, what He's like. If you ever just read through the book of Psalms and you read them and you take just a general overview, it's just a constant, continual remembrance. God did this, God did that. And thinking of the things that God has done throughout the course of time provokes praise and worship. It's good to remember the things that God has done. To remember them. Acknowledge Him. Worship Him and give thanks for it. Psalm 95 and verse 1, he says, O come, let us sing unto the Lord. Let us make a joyful noise to the rock of our salvation. Salvation's a wonderful thing, but it ain't God. Only He is God. If He didn't save us, He would still be just as worthy of all worship and honor and praise and glory. Just for who He is. Let us come before His presence with thanksgiving and make a joyful noise unto Him with psalms. For the Lord is a great God and a great King above all gods. We might be a little people, but we have a great God. He's no smaller a God in the midst of just a handful of people than He is of the greatest of congregations. He is the same God. He's just as great. Nothing diminishes Him. If not one single man on the face of the earth knew Him, believed Him, it wouldn't change who He is. It wouldn't change what He is. In His hands are the deep places of the earth. Think about that for a minute. The deep places of the earth that no man has ever seen or ever will see. Firmly in His hands and in His control. The strength of the hills is His also. The sea is His, and He made it. And His hands formed a dry land. Oh, come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker. There is no other way to approach before Him except bowed down and low. To kneel before Him, to bow down to Him. I've heard Brother Conrad say this a number of years ago, probably decades ago. And I believe it's true. He said, most men are going to go to hell for no other reason than their pride. They just won't bow. Isn't that sad? They just won't bow. What little they know of Him, they don't like Him. Heard this atheist spouting off the other day talking about the God of the Old Testament. How mean He is. How He's just a killer. You know, He goes out and kills all these nations and He hadn't even thought about it. God kills everybody sooner or later. He's God. He creates everybody. And he sets the day of their death too, and he's not wrong about that. That's who he is, and he is to be approached from a low position. We are so far beneath him. Even the highest of archangels comes lowly before him. And comes to mind one angel in the book of Revelation shouting, "Who will not fear him? He is so great and so high and so lifted up. There's none like him." It's important to remember these things, that this is who we're approaching unto. And he is also, as it says in the second verse, he is to be approached with thanksgiving. He owes us nothing, and he gives us everything. He even gave his own son.
Yes.
He's given us everything. Can you imagine? The book of Revelation says, the Lord tells the last church, Laodicea, "To him who overcomes, I will grant to sit with me in my throne." Can you imagine that? We don't even know what that fully means. None of the angels get to sit with him in his throne. His great salvation that he gives to us, his love, his mercy, his grace, his eye is upon us every day, carefully watching over us. And even the day when he takes us from this present world, he will not have let us down in that. He will see us through it. We are to approach him, to worship him, to bow down before him, to be kneeled, to be thankful in all things. As Paul exhorts us in the epistles, in all things, give thanks. Even in those hard, unpleasant things that seem like they don't make any sense. It seems like the wrong way. It's not what we would choose. It's not what we would do. But God hasn't changed one bit. He's faithful. He's gracious. He's merciful. He's loving to us. He chastens us. He reproves us. He instructs us. Remember one fellow saying a number of years ago, and I think he may be right, the first step in apostasy is to stop giving thanks, to no more be thankful to God. You see some folks do that. Something catastrophic happens in their life, and God hadn't changed, but they've changed in the way that they view and think about him. There's a word of warning even in this as he continues in verse 7. He says, exhorting us to worship and bow down and kneel before our Maker. It says, "For he is our God." It doesn't make any difference what a man thinks. This is the God of every man, and he's going to answer to him. We are the people of his pasture. He feeds us. He nourishes us. He leads us along. The sheep of his hand, in his very hand. This is not an impersonal God, stands at a distance from us. This is a loving Father. Stoops himself down and reaches his hand down to us. Leads us along, feeds us, corrects us, instructs us, directs us, saves us when we get out of the way. He does all of these things. And then he continues, says, "But today if you will hear his voice..." He speaks to us. Hear his voice today. Yes, we know him. We are his people. But he still exhorts us, "Harden not your heart." Walk with the Lord for any time at all, you know, unexpected things happen. Things that confuse you. Things that confound you. Things that make you question, "Man, am I right about this or what? What in the world's going on?" But he encourages here, don't harden your heart against him. What we think and feel about God doesn't change him a bit, but it will mean everything to you, what you think and feel about him. Harden not your heart is in the provocation, is in the day of temptation in the wilderness. All of God's people are tried and proven whether their faith is real or not. And if you think about faith, to be able to live by faith, as the Lord made clear to us in Romans, that the just shall live by faith, it is required. If you're going to be just in God's sight, you're going to follow Him by faith. And to follow Him by faith mandates several things. The first of which, there's things you cannot know. If it's by faith, you can't know some things. You have to trust Him, believe His word, primarily that He is exactly who He said He is. And secondly, the things that come in your life will be more than you can handle on your own. Because if you could handle it, if your faith were to be measured, say, right here, and if your trials and tribulations are beneath it and you can handle that, it's not faith. That's you. When they come up here, and that's usually where we have our problems, when they come up here more than what you can handle, there's nothing you can do but trust Him and rely on Him. That's what happens in your life. He tries us. He proves us. We shouldn't be surprised by this, even though inevitably we are when they come. You ever had something happen in your life and you think, man, I think I could have handled anything but this. Anything but this. Always seems like it's the wrong thing. But it's meant to be that way. This is what is meant to be that challenge to your faith to prove it. Whether or not you really believe God. I know a lot of people think they do. You ever found yourself doubting in a way that you never thought you could have doubted? It's your faith being tried. Nobody really knows if his faith is real until it comes into question. And see if it stands in the fire and the test. Verse 9, he says, when your fathers tempted me and proved me and saw my work, they saw miracle after miracle. If you look back in your life, you see the same thing. How many times have you seen God faithful to you, merciful to you, gracious to you, deliverance upon deliverance upon deliverance, and then something else comes up and we doubt Him again? He's continually testing us and trying us. He says in verse 10, 40 years long was I grieved with this generation. Notice that trial, that temptation, that trying. That 40 is a probationary number. But 40 years, that's a long time. This is not some quick little thing you go through and you just look back and say, boy, I'm glad that's over. That's not how it works. It's continuous. 40 years long was I grieved with this generation and said, it is a people that do err in their heart. Now we know that they're an example, Hebrews tells us, those that fell in the wilderness because of unbelief. But he tells us right here what their problem was. They erred in their heart. It's like what the Lord said about Israel. He said, they worship me with their mouths, but their heart is far from me. Every man's problem, when he has a problem and it's with God, it's in his heart. He doesn't like something about God. He doesn't like what He's doing. He doesn't like what He's putting him through. In other words, God's not acting like the sugar daddy they expect Him to be and just provide whatever it is that they want. Even when we come and worship God, it is on His terms. We are going to have to accept and love who He really is. Not what we expected Him to be. We are often caught by surprise as to the realities of God. What He's like. How He handles us. How He leads us. How He corrects us. Things He does with us. Things He puts us through. You ever read something in the Bible and all of a sudden it jumps out and realize, wow, that's really different than what I thought? In fact, it's the complete opposite. what I once thought? That I was taught my whole life, I would have sworn this was the truth. And come to find out, it wasn't like that at all. He says they err in their heart. Their heart is not right with Him. They're not thankful. They don't bow to Him. Even as believers, we will continuously have to go through that, bowing to Him every day. It's a big aspect of take up your cross and follow me daily, that personal death that comes if you're going to follow Him. The bowing that has to take place every day. The correction, the instruction, the reproof. You know what the word reproof means? To be proven wrong. Isn't that fun? Who likes to be proven wrong? But we are all the time. And He says, they have not known my ways. Think about that. They don't know what God's really like. Some of them like the fantasy story of, you know, just come and confess this and say that, and you'll have a wonderful life. It's not what He's like. There can be a lot of correction, a lot of humbling, a lot of dying, submitting, bowing. Going to be pain. In case you haven't realized it, everything you've ever had in your life, you will lose every bit of it in due time. Everything you know, including your own life here in this present world. Live long enough, you'll lose your spouse. Your mind won't be what it used to be. Your physical body won't be. Your health, your strength, your eyesight, you lose it all. May have a nice house today. You might not tomorrow. Live long enough, everything changes and everything is a loss. And the reality is, the only thing that you're going to be left with in your life is just you and God. And who He really is, His ways, what He's like. What it's like to walk with Him, to be His people, to be under His care. And it's very important and crucial to not let yourself be hardened. Don't err in your heart. Don't be surprised when you're corrected and found out wrong about things that even your whole life you swore were true, and find out you were wrong. But to approach Him, to keep that tenderness in your heart towards Him, to be lowly, bowed before Him, and thankful in everything. There's a reason why Paul stressed that. In everything, give thanks. This is a man who spent a great deal of his Christian life sitting in a prison, one prison or another. He was constantly on the road. He couldn't have had a home. If he did, he was never in it. These things are important to realize. And if we are going to worship Him and truly love Him and be thankful, have to be aware of these things. Know these things. Worship Him for who He is, not for what you can get from Him. It's wonderful the things that God does for us, even His salvation. But that doesn't make up who He is. If He saved no one, He'd be the same God. It's the reason why the great commandment is to love Him with all your heart, soul, and might. To love Him. That's what your whole purpose in life is. That's everything. That is your life. It's God. It's not your spouse. It's not your job. Or even your ministry. It's just Him. This is why we worship Him. He is everything. He's life. He created everything. He created us. And He has caused us to know Him and His ways. And for us to worship Him because He is worthy. Amen. Does anybody have a song they'd like to sing?